Before we begin this episode, spoiler alert! Hi, this is Sha 1.0 coming to you from the Witch's Editing Tower with a friendly message. This is a two-part episode and both episodes have spoilers from Harry Potter books 1 to 7 and also movies 1 to 8. So if you're in the middle of watching or reading those, it might be a good idea to skip this episode. On with the podcast! Happy Halloween! The beast appeared suddenly on the golden plates, as it had at the start of term banquet. Harry was just helping himself to a baked potato when Professor Quirrell came sprinting into the hall, his turban askew and terror on his face. Everyone stared as he reached Professor Dumbledore's chair, slumped against the table, and cast, "Troll in the dungeons! Thought you ought to know."
Speaking of exclamations, I don't know if you know this. When ghosts say boo, the word boo isn't just a sound that ghosts make. In Latin, the word boo actually means I exclaim or shout or I'm alarmed. So when a ghost says boo, he's actually saying I'm alarming you.
I had something going on over there, but now I have this piece of information in my head. Let's start this episode.
Hi, this is Sharanya.
And I'm Sha. And this is Let 'Em Say, a podcast where two girls with an overactive imagination take on a geeky journey through fiction. Welcome to episode 5, Halloween's of Hogwarts.
I feel like I should apologize for the theme song.
I got too excited. I loved all the spooky sounds.
I'm sorry for your ears.
No. We have nothing to apologize for. That was music to my ears. It was everything that Halloween embodies. It was spooky ghost sound. It was creaky floorboards. It was wolf howling in the background. It was everything. So, you know, you're welcome.
Okay. So in this episode, we'll be talking about Halloween at Hogwarts. What else, Sharanya?
We'll also be talking about Halloween in general, Lily and James's death, the vanquishment of Voldemort, the thin veil between the spirit realm and the human realm, what it means for magic, and of course, tons of ghost stories. So without further ado, let's roll.
Okay, so what you heard just now is the description of Halloween in Hogwarts as recorded in Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone. So for idiots. What do you think?
I'm kidding! I'm kidding! Americans!
Today, when I was doing a little bit of research for this episode, I came across this document that gives the differences between the American and the UK versions, including all the words that got changed for the US version. And I would be lying if I didn't think, what the hell, why do they need this? Basic things like rubbish got changed to nonsense, for example. And I was like, who doesn't know that when you exclaim and say rubbish, it means nonsense? So, you know,
we're sorry, Americans. We're sorry.
It's only the start of the episode and we're already getting so dramatic. Keeping in mind that like the entire 7 Harry Potter books is essentially Spookfest. And like all of it could be just Halloween episodes. So it's about to get really dramatic. What do you think of Philosopher's Stone and the Halloween scene?
I think it's such a classic moment. I love this. I particularly love this Halloween moment out of all of them. Actually, no, I love all of them. I can't say that. But one of the reasons, let me rephrase. One of the reasons I love this scene so much is because it's the moment when Harry, Ron, and Hermione like became the trio, because Professor Quirrell, as he very dramatically exclaimed in the beginning, went troll in the dungeon, and Hermione was crying in the bathroom at that time, and Harry and Ron decided to be good friends and go save her. And
that's sort of true. Let me just like give a brief description in case anyone hasn't read it in a while.
So the trio are at charms class on
the morning of Halloween, and they learn Wingardium Leviosa. Hermione explains it to Ron the correct classic way of reciting it. Yeah, it's just classic Hermione. He gets annoyed, and then he bitches about her to Harry, saying like, oh, she's so bossy, no wonder she doesn't have friends. She overhears him, and he doesn't care. So she's not at the feast, because she's crying her eyes out in the ghost bathroom. Professor Quirrell says that there's a troll in the dungeon. They don't actually know where it is, and they don't know where Hermione is as well. It's just that at that point, Harry being Harry, this is just like the first instance where you see Harry being quite heroic and also having like some foresight. Harry can be quite a blur jock for the entirety of the series, but when a crisis happens, he's in his element. So he knows that, okay, Hermione's not there. She doesn't know about the troll. She can bump into the troll. Just like brilliant thinking, you know, for someone who's 11 years old.
With very little knowledge, actually, with the Wingardium Leviosa.
No knowledge. They can't even do the spell.
They barely did that right. And it was only because Hermione explained it to Ron. So,
so it's a good thing.
Yeah.
There's something that I don't get in that scene. Why did they lie to Professor McGonagall? Why? It made no sense at all. Like, they could have saved their necks if they had just told the truth, because they were not doing anything wrong. They're just looking out for their friend. They saved a life in a way. Why did they?
Well, I think, I mean, from Harry's perspective, he's never really had adults that he knew would trust him or believe him. And I feel like that's probably a contributing factor. And at that point, he didn't have the beautiful relationship with McGonagall that we all love so much. And I mean, this is like the beginnings of Harry Potter discovering this entire magic world. He doesn't know which authority figure he can go to and he can confide in. So at least from Harry's perspective, that's what I think is the reason.
That's true. Also, they're 11-year-old children. So, I mean, it's totally expected that something like that would have happened.
Yeah.
In the movie, there's this brilliant scene with Dumbledore, the only Dumbledore I would recognize, which is, I think, Richard Griffiths.
Hold it. This is Sha 1.0 back here again to point out that past recording me meant Richard Harris and not Richard Griffiths, because the latter played Uncle Vernon.
He screams, silence, and everyone falls silent. And first of all, his voice is so loud, it just echoes in the entire hall. Yeah. Everyone just shuts up. And there's this brilliant scene where Malfoy is screaming his butt off. I love that scene so much. And it also speaks so much to how powerful a wizard Dumbledore is. Oh my God, amazing.
So I just double checked. So yeah, what he does is he tells everyone to stay in the Great Hall and specifically asks Gryffindor Prefect, the one we all know and love, the man, the mystery, Percy Weasley, to guard the door. That was so much build up for such an anticlimactic sentence. But yeah, so that's what happens in the movie version. And Ron and Harry actually have to sneak past and fight through to get out to find Hermione.
Yep, and they do a good job, and that's when you have the legendary trio, which is probably such an iconic moment. As you read all the books, you realize the reason that they actually survive most of the time is because of Hermione. So this is such an important moment.
Including that moment.
It's such a good use of foreshadowing by J.K. Rowling right there. this is going to happen for the rest of the series. She's going to save their asses because of something they did in the first place.
And if you think about it, their whole relationship is kind of like that. Hermione's the one with the skill, the knowledge. Even when she's the one in trouble, she's actually guiding them. Harry's the one with a little bit of foresight. He has a gut instinct that he follows. Yeah. And Ron.
And Ron. Bumbling idiot who's just there.
He does help.
Gets better. He does get better here and there.
Yeah, so basically Ron is Ron. So it's such a very, it's like a very good defining point on how that trio is.
Yeah. Another thing that I was wondering while reading this chapter again, I mean, this sort of leads back to the Philosopher's Stone. Where did that troll come from? Did Quirrell actually release the troll from the underground chamber? The stone gets moved from Gringotts to Hogwarts the day that Harry meets Hagrid, right? So on Harry's birthday, mm-hmm. right? So that's the day that Hagrid clears the vault and he transports it to Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. But I don't know at which point they set up all the enchantments to protect the stone, because you would think it's from the beginning, because that's when Fluffy's already been there. The students are not allowed to walk past the third corridor at all. But also, like, you know that the mirror is not there yet, because Harry sees the mirror only at Christmas.
Yeah.
It's in his classroom somewhere. Where did this troll come from?
And you'd assume that it's hard to sneak a troll as big as Hogwarts may be, unless Quirrell knew about some of the secret passages.
Okay, so like...
But even then, like, do you sedate the troll and...
But the troll was completely alert and conscious.
I know, so you sedate it and bring it in, and then once it's awake, you alert everyone.
Maybe. I don't get how, because like the trapdoor from Fluffy's lair / room mm-hmm. drops downwards. But then again, it's magic. He probably, like what you said, sedated the troll, made it like lightweight, transported it up. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just surprising that no one suspected him, because that's his bit of magic, you know, to guard the stone. And he found the troll. So like, it's surprising that Dumbledore didn't ask more questions. He just asked Snape to watch out.
But one of the other things I really loved about the very first Halloween in Harry Potter is the decor, the way you described it as well, right? With the live bats. Mm-hmm. It, honestly, to me, it was very terrifying reading that. It was very fitting for Halloween. Mm-hmm. I remember I couldn't watch Harry Potter when it first came out. My dad had actually rented out the CD for it, and I was way too scared to watch it. So,
because of that scene?
No, just generally, it had a very spooky vibe. I was very young. When it first came out, which year did it come out in?
2001. Yeah. Yes.
So 2001.
2005.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, you're excused. I was very scared.
But the first movie is like one of my favorites because it's so true to its element in terms of like the sets, the Great Hall, mm-hmm. and also like the kids being really perfect in their characters.
I think they actually become worse as actors as they grow. In the first movie, they're like brilliant, all of them, doing an amazing job. Yeah. They're all like, where the fuck am I? What the hell have I gotten myself into? Especially the Muggleborns. You can tell which ones the Muggleborns are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that essentially concludes Philosopher's Stone.
We move on to Chamber of Secrets.
Yep.
A book where the entire fucking book is equivalent to a Halloween horror story. It just has this overall dark, really dark vibes to it from the start. Like, at the beginning of the book, you meet the Whomping Willow. It's already something that, it sounds like it's coming out of a Goosebumps story. Mm-hmm. There's Aragog, completely terrifying spider, giant spider. What else? There's a car that just drives off by itself, rescues them from the spiders. Mm-hmm. So much about Chamber of Secrets is actually just a R.L. Stein novel.
Yeah, a terrifying diary. That consumes you.
Exactly. A guy who comes out of a diary and is trying to kill a 12-year-old child.
Yeah.
life out of an 11-year-old girl.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it...
A giant snake. Okay, I'm done. Yeah.
Yeah, if you think about it, the Chamber of Secrets could very well be a haunted house.
100%.
If anyone said haunted house, you have two different styles of haunted house that you can choose from. One is like old hospital ruin that was a mental institute where they tortured people, and the other was Chamber of Secrets.
Oh God.
I'd go home, to be honest. But
I might chance the mental hospital one because it's not
the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God. A big ass snake that can kill you just by looking at it directly in its eyes. Like, no, just, I'm out.
So just a very slight tangent here, but when you think about the basilisk, do you sort of get that Medusa, Gorgon, snake on her hair kind of vibe from it? Turns you into stone, petrification, and turning into stone. I feel like there are some parallels.
Ooh, slightly, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are a lot of parallels between Harry Potter and other fantasy fiction, mythological aspects as well. So, yeah, the ring from Lord of the Rings and how, like, when you put it on or it takes over your mind and you behave differently. Mm-hmm. The same thing happened with Horcruxes as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So there are a lot of similarities. But yeah, good one. That is true. Also, like, it speaks to what a terrifying creature it is. Because remember what happened to Nearly Headless Nick when he looked at the basilisk? Being a ghost, he couldn't die. So he got burned. He was all, like, charred.
Yeah.
But it also makes you wonder, before Ginny and Lucius Malfoy, you know, use the diary to open the Chamber of Secrets, what the hell was that bloody snake doing underneath the school? What was it feeding on?
And you know what? The thing is, ever since I read and watched Chamber of Secrets, and now I'm currently located in Australia, the country known for its deadly, deadly animals, including snakes. I am so nervous whenever I hear pipes creaking. I'm like, this is it. Gosh. It's a basilisk. Don't look directly at it. I'm going to die.
Carry a mirror around.
Or, you know, maybe it's just going to strike me and poison me within seconds. I'm not proud of this moment. I'm actually quite ashamed of it. So my shower door is one that slides. And usually in the sliding doors, you have rubbering, right? So that it slides smoothly. So the rubbering in my sliding door had come undone. Here's, like, a fun fact about rubbering.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It looks like snake scales.
Oh, God.
I panic called my friend, and I just went, there's a thing on my door that wasn't there before. Can you just confirm? You've been to my washroom before. Can you confirm that you haven't seen this before? I don't want to touch it in case it's a snake and it bites me. And she just goes, what? Oh my God, show me. She's like, dude, that's just the rubbering that's come out. Here's the thing, right? I assumed that it was just the skin of the snake, which is why it wasn't moving, and that the snake had escaped and gone somewhere else.
Oh, God.
I still was a little worried, and I what I did was I took my sliding door and I harshly opened and closed it just to make sure there's nothing left in there. So that if there was a snake, it would rattle or it would move or just show me a sign, and if there wasn't a snake...
Yeah, but if going by your theory that it had shed its skin and escaped, that would have done nothing.
It would have done nothing. But look, at that moment, I was just looking forward to a shower. I had just finished working out and I needed a shower desperately. I was like, I will deal with the snake later if it's not currently in my view.
I really need for us to get off this tangent right now because I'm just getting more uncomfortable by the minute. So, Harry Potter.
Another great thing about the Halloween in Chamber of Secrets is Death Day.
Death Day party!
Yeah. It's the weirdest party. But what I loved the most out of that party was that they had super moldy food.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they had it is because... ghosts can't eat, but if they walk through super moldy food, they can almost taste it.
Yeah, which is very interesting in terms of like paranormal, trying to understand entities that are ghosts.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder why it had to be rotten food. Like, yeah, rotten food stinks and like it's a lot more putrid, but
yeah,
why can't you just take something that's like a food that has really strong flavors, like durians? I mean, come on, that would totally work. There's no way that a ghost would not be able to almost taste durians.
So I think maybe because the ghost is deceased and expired, the food that they taste, because the food that they're seeing is also expired, maybe that's the food, they can taste the food in its original state.
Are you just trying to make a pun here?
Like, no. Well, I mean, unintentionally, I'm always trying to make a pun. But, okay. But no, I mean, it, like, that's the connection I made, that they're sort of tasting the food in, like, the actual normal way it should taste without being expired. But to be able to connect to it, it has to be as dead as them.
Oh, right. Okay, now it makes a lot more sense.
Because if you think about it, right, like, the Egyptian pharaohs, for example, why didn't they just have altars where their servants, slaves, worked and worshipped in there? Like, why did they have to die with them?
As opposed to,
like, having a separate altar or something to that where they would work while still being human. Or even, I mean, ignore the human aspect, right? Or ignore the animals that they kill to bring with them. Like, a lot of cultures, in their death, they burn money and they bury food and riches.
Yeah, that's just really interesting.
Anyways, back to Harry Potter. I really like this because of the guest list. I think it's such an interesting guest list.
I like everything about the death day party. Like, it's so glum and it's so bleak. And it's also, like, in celebration of something really terrible.
Yeah.
But everything, like, from the description of the dungeon where it's held is just so amazing. Allow me to illuminate. The passageway leading to a nearly headless Snake's party had been lined with candles too, though the effect was far from cheerful. These were long, thin, jet black tapers, all burning bright blue, casting a dim, ghostly light even over their own living faces. The temperature dropped with every step they took. Harry shivered and drew his robes tightly around him. He heard what sounded like 1,000 fingernails scraping an enormous blackboard. Is that supposed to be music? Ron whispered. They turned a corner and saw a nearly headless Snake standing at the doorway, hung with black velvet drapes. My dear friends, he said mournfully, welcome, welcome. So pleased you could come. He's just ushering them into a party to celebrate him dying. Like, it's hilarious. Careful not to walk through anyone, said Ron nervously. So good. Everything about this scene is so brilliant.
So this is something you don't know while you're reading Chamber of Secrets. The Bloody Baron and the Grey Lady were both at that party. That's like worse than, I mean, it's bad enough if you have to be in the same party as your ex. I don't even know if awkward covers the spectrum that would feel.
Another thing that doesn't make sense is why are they both at Hogwarts? They didn't die in Hogwarts. Why did they choose to come back as ghosts? Like, especially these two. With Nearly Headless Nick, I think it's because he's just not pleased that he was beheaded. I don't get why the Grey Lady and the Bloody Baron would choose to remain in all of eternity as ghosts, especially given this barbaric ending.
I remember Nearly Headless Snake talks about, remember when Sirius dies and Harry goes to him and asks him if it's possible for Sirius to come back as a ghost? He explains that people that manifest as ghosts, they're usually not ready for death when it comes to them. And they're not brave enough to go through.
Oh, right. I vaguely remember this now.
Right? And he's like, I don't think Sirius wouldn't have been brave to not go through.
Oh, that's such a touching line, but also sad. But yeah. I don't get why they choose to both be in Hogwarts.
That's so true.
The Grey Lady, maybe because like she stole her mom's diadem. So there's a lot of connections with Hogwarts there.
Mm-hmm.
The bloody bear, maybe they should follow her.
Yeah, because he's in love with her. It's unrequited love. You do stupid things. Or maybe he's trying to make amends.
As a ghost?
As a ghost. Who knows? But he was very scary. He didn't really work on his anger management issues.
Seeing as people use him as a shield to, like, get through to peace, I don't think he did.
but we're forgetting about one of the best ghosts in Hogwarts, the Fat Friar.
Oh, who's, like, always, like, a cheerful monk. He's a monk, right?
He's a monk.
Oh, that's just so cute.
He's a monk known for forgiveness. And I looked up the reason why he died. Do you know the reason why he died?
I don't.
He was too benevolent as a wizard, and he would cure people whenever they were sick. And at that time, you know how witches were treated. So he was a healer. That was his thing. And all he wanted to do was help people and cure them. And people got suspicious for good reason. they were not wrong.
Was he murdered? No.
He was burned. I think he was burned. The Fat Friar's kindness was to be his undoing. He was executed because senior churchmen grew suspicious of his ability to cure the pox merely by poking peasants with a stick.
he didn't even try.
Wait, hold on. What's worse is... and his ill-advised habit of pulling rabbits out of the communion cup.
He didn't even try to hide his magic, man.
He's the one that's always kind of supporting Peeves, even though no one likes him. And he's like, we should give him a chance.
Yeah, there's that brilliant scene, I don't know in which movie, where he's saying that. And then Nearly Headless Nick is like, how many times do we have to give Peeves a chance?
During Death Day, during the Death Day party, where Nearly Headless Nick doesn't want Peeves to be there. And he's like, we have to give him a chance.
That is so cute. I can totally see why he's in Hufflepuff. This is just not helping people to think like Hufflepuff. They're all just, you know,
lovable idiots.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, but it's so brilliant.
Moving on to the list, there's Myrtle Warren. Did you know her surname was Warren? Because I certainly didn't.
Oh, no. I didn't. I just kept thinking that her first name was Moaning, second name Myrtle. First name Crab, second name Bag, Crab Bag.
So, Moaning Myrtle, and I think it's important to see her at this point because she's kind of signaling sort of a foreshadow to explaining the first time things went wrong with Tom Riddle and the Chamber of Secrets. Right? That's how she died.
Mm-hmm. You know, like there's a theory going around that Ron is a seer / Ron is Dumbledore from the future going back in the past. Have you watched that video?
No, but I've read a lot of fanfic like that.
It's a huge conspiracy theory. Ron is actually Dumbledore who managed to like travel back in time because a lot of the things that Ron says in an offhanded manner just happens to be true. So like one of the things is when they are looking up who Tom Riddle is, they don't know who he is yet, right? So they go to the trophy room and they find that he's been given a special services to the School of War and there's like a medal there. And Ron just says, oh, maybe, you know, he got this award for killing off Moaning Myrtle because that would have done everyone a favor. And that is sort of true because he did, in a way, by unleashing the bloody snake. So
I think I've seen that thread somewhere. But yeah, interesting theory. Who knows? I honestly don't think so. It's also a little gross because Ron and Hermione.
Oh, God, I didn't think of that before. Oh, no.
Sorry.
Also, I like Dumbledore being gay, so let's just keep it.
Yeah, I like him being gay. I don't even want him to be bi. Lupin is bi. I strongly believe this with my whole heart. And this is a hill that I will die on. But we will get to that in another episode, I think. But we should cover some of the other guests quickly.
Okay.
There is a group of gloomy nuns, which there's no explanation for. There is a knight with an arrow sticking out of his forehead.
Very specific. Forehead.
Yeah, so I'm a little confused about the way... ghosts, like the manifestation, their physical manifestation, because
right,
I guess it does, they do become ghosts in the form that they died, because the Bloody Baron is called the Bloody Baron because he always has blood.
Mm.
And Nearly Headless, Nearly Headless Nick, I don't know what I just said, Nearly Headless Nick, his head is like half cut off, but I don't think the weapon is stuck there, right? Because that's probably taken off before he dies. So yeah, Knight with an arrow sticking out of his forehead, I wonder if it's there because he died with the arrow in his forehead.
Probably. So it's like the last apparel that's upon you, which is probably not the best. Imagine like if you die and as you're dying, like a dog shits on top of you. And it so what? Yeah, that totally sucks. You come back as a ghost with like dog poop all over you. Like what? How does this work?
I'm glad that this is the line you've decided to think along though.
I'm a doctor. We deal with human byproducts.
Yeah, but you're talking about dog poop.
Oh, I know why. I drove over some dog poop the other day. I was really pissed. And like 2 days later, I had a flat tire. And the first thought that came into my mind was, yes, now I can dump that bloody tire because I drove over dog poop. And my dad was like, you should have just washed it. You wanted to get rid of it? I'm like, what's done is done.
We're moving on now. It's gone. So going back to the guest list, you obviously have the Headless Hunt, which...
I don't like them so much.
Yeah, I don't like them at all. And the head of the Headless Hunt, Patrick Delaney Podmore. Delaney, sorry.
So properly decapitated Podmore, as yeah. How Nearly Headless Nick refers to him.
P.D. Podmore. Yeah, and he was kind of stealing Sir Nicholas's thunder throughout the party, and I'm not a big fan of him. Like, honestly, he's
no sick. No, but there's this really funny line where he starts a game of hockey using, like, their beheaded, and then everyone starts clapping in the middle of the speech. It's like, Nicholas is actually giving a speech, and then there's, like, a brilliant line that says, there's a really good line that says, Harry started clapping too, until he noticed the look on Nicholas's face, and I was just like, oh my god, this is a savage. I totally imagine Harry looking like it's so funny.
I don't know if I really want to, because I know I would be terrified, but I wish I was at that death day party.
I know, it sounds amazingly terrible. It's so funny.
I mean, they probably would have enjoyed themselves if they went to the feast. But why would you want to miss this?
Exactly. I mean, no food, lots of ghosts behaving super weird, versus, you know, pumpkin juice and pumpkin pie and like warm food, warmth of humans that are alive.
Yeah.
But yeah, but so also, this is the day that the Chamber of Secrets was opened, right? So it's like the beginning of the entire mystery, if you will have it. And yeah. The basilisk has already attacked
Filch's cat.
Well, yeah, not a person. The cat, Mrs. Norris, whom everyone hates with all their heart.
Yeah.
But they still feel bad for her. But yeah. So, important day. It seems like J.K. Rowling chooses Halloween to plan a lot of important events.
Yep.
So, yeah, that pretty much ends Halloween in Chamber of Secrets. It doesn't end well because Harry hears the basilisk saying, rip, tear, kill, so hungry, something, I want a feast, I haven't eaten in years, or something like that.
I feel like that sometimes. I relate.
You relate to a deadly freaking snake? What?
Only because it said I haven't eaten in forever. Hashtag mood.
Oh my god. Oh my god. This is super cute. Oh, this is just reminding me of Voldemort. I mean, like, because, you know, his relationship with Nagini. And like he always like talks to her about feeling some human to her.
I know. Here's the thing, okay? I know Voldemort is a bad person. And I know Nagini has been used to kill so many people. But their relationship, like, that is how you should be with a pet, right? You should love it that much.
I'm going to stop you right there. Said pet was a human woman who has a curse, becomes a freaking snake, and then finds a sociopathic, psychopathic murderer to befriend, which is fine because now she's a snake and she also has that thirst for killing.
Yeah.
Possess a freaking soul. This is worse than that whole Avatar scene where like they connect with the trees by pretty much fucking the damn tree.
I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying that's how I am with my plant babies, okay?
Oh,
I talk to them.
Oh my god.
I love them. I give whatever I have to them. I tell them I killed a caterpillar for them. Where, okay, I didn't kill it. I just removed the leaf that the caterpillar was in because it was just, it was eating my basil. It was killing my baby, okay? So I didn't throw it away, but I also just kept it in the side so the wind kind of threw it away.
I just have this to say, this is very rich coming from somebody who called me a sucker last year for buying like 10 plants at one go.
I that didn't call you a sucker.
Yeah, you did.
Look, you bought two types of cacti. Cactus.
Did I?
You no, did. I didn't. Like the tiny one.
I got three types of succulents.
Oh. Well, that doesn't help your case.
No, it doesn't.
In any shape or form. So,
no. And most of those plants died anyway, so.
Oh, God.
They're not meant to live in room temperature, so.
Look, the point is, Voldemort sucked. Nagini sucked. Quite literally. But,
oh, God.
A very interesting pet owner relationship. And they were really fucked up, but they were together. They were, like, strong and bonded with each other. And they got each other. They understood each other. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, because he possessed a fucking soul.
Before I make things
worse. Of course they understood each other.
God.
I am not responsible. I'm not responsible for what Sharnia is saying right now. So if you have complaints, please send your emails to her directly.
To my personal email.
Not to Nerdumsay. Exactly. No, not to Nerdumsay. So, you know, oh God, it's super weird.
Hey, Sha 1.0 here again from the Witches Editing Tower to say that we went on talking for 2 hours, so episode 1 ends here. See you guys at episode 2!